Currently, the media space has been dominated by how much some top earners are making on OnlyFans. But what hasn't really been discussed is how the company has lost billions of dollars in valuation in a very short amount of time. And things just got even more messy because is now in a very bad situation after the CEO passed away. So essentially, you have one of the biggest platforms in the world, especially when it comes to that profitability per employee metric that you've probably seen online. And they just lost the one person running it, and almost nobody knew who he really was and that he existed. So the dude never gave interviews. There's really no real footage of him online. And one of the only pictures of him online was the one from his LinkedIn that, had no ties to the platform whatsoever. So that's a little bit interesting. But for years, he was quietly making billions running one of the most controversial platforms on the internet. But then, in just the last month, he passed away and left the entire business in limbo. So, I mean, to catch everyone up to speed here, OF was created in 2016 by a guy named Tim Stokely. He was the youngest kid in a family from Essex, England. And he spent years trying to launch internet business after internet business and had a whole lot of failures. And the guy burned through a whole bunch of his own money and goodwill from friends and family, to put it lightly. But his dad, Guy, real name by the way, he watched multiple projects go essentially nowhere and had funded more than a few of them. So when Tim came back with yet another idea, he went, okay, here's £10,000 and that's the last one I'm funding. Little did he know though, that money became the seed funds. And the original structure was simple. Creators set a monthly price, subscribers paid it, and the platform keeps 20%. And I guess the creator walks away with 80%. Tim's original pitch wasn't necessarily focused on adult content, but the idea had been open to anyone who could build a paying audience, including adult creators, since 2017. And from the start, it was a family operation in the early days, with Tim's brother, Tom, running the operations, and their father, Guy, handling the finances. Guy, I guess, was just their guy and father. And that one group, I guess they figured out the model faster than anyone else. And that showed up in some serious numbers, because in 2018, the platform was getting traction, but running headfirst into some structural problems. The payment processors that made it possible to, you know, actually collect the money from the subscribers weren't a big fan of the adult side of their business. And obviously, you know, no payment processing means no business, full stop. So Tim sold it. And the buyer was someone that almost nobody had heard of, and nobody would really hear of him for many years to come. His name was Leonid Ravinsky, who was born in Odessa, Ukraine, in 1982. His family relocated to Chicago while he was still a kid, and he studied economics at Northwestern University and graduated in 2002. And from that point forward, he essentially built an entire career at, you know, scaling internet companies while keeping his name almost completely out of circulation. And even after he became the owner of one of the most talked about platforms on the planet, a single photo of him made the rounds, the same one over and over, which was attached to a LinkedIn profile that described him as the president at Leo.com, and, you know, completely left OF out of the picture. So essentially, what we know about this guy is he lived in a $19 million waterfront property in Miami, but he gave zero interviews. He made no public statements. He was, I guess, for every practical purpose, someone who did not want to be found. What he was always doing, however, was running his own things, and he'd been building internet businesses since he was a teenager. And by his mid-20s, he'd built and operated more than 10 websites, developing a deep understanding in, I guess, the mechanics of adult content or entertainment and how that whole payment structure works and how he can get that to work without getting banned. And since he understood how this industry worked, when he was presented with the chance to buy, he did so in 2018 for $30 million. And it's safe to say that was a phenomenal investment for him, because in 2019, the platform processed around $300 million in total payments and cleared around $7 million in profit. Then a year later, that gross payment volume hit $2.2 billion. Then by 2021, it was approaching $5 billion. And none of these numbers were being announced, but the company files with the UK as required. But Leonid had no interest in turning any of these numbers into some massive press release like many other entrepreneurs would. But then came that moment that probably told you more about OF than anything else, because in August of 2021, the platform announced that it was going to ban explicit content. Now, that was confusing to a lot of people, because that kind of sounds like if Burger King announced it was going to stop selling burgers. So why would they ever do that? Well, it makes sense a little bit later on when you get the full picture. But obviously, the response from the creators on their platform was immediate and very clear. So 6 days later, the ban was reversed, and I guess that just showed the creators that they're the product. They actually have the power here of this platform. Because at the end of the day, the platform cannot exist without the creators and the consumers paying for it. So the reason all this actually matters becomes a whole lot more clear once you look at the numbers, though. Because in 2024, they processed $7.2 billion in total transactions between the fans and the creators. OF's cut of that was about 20%, and that came out to $1.41 billion in net revenue. That is a behemoth of a company. But after expenses, pre-tax profit landed at $684 million, where the entire operation ran by only 46 full-time employees. That is insane. And then Leonid's personal payouts track the platform's growth, as you would pretty much expect, because in 2021, he collected around $284 million. In 2022, he collected $338 million. In 2023, he collected $472 million. And then in 2024, he collected $701 million, which works out to about $2 million per day, every day for the entire year, which means the total earnings pulled between 2021 and 2024 were just under $1.8 billion from a company that he paid roughly $30 million for. That might be one of the best investments of all time. But at the same time, the distribution between the creators is wildly uneven because, you know, you have this whole notion where a bunch of people would start an OF and make a whole bunch of money. But for the most part, that's not true. It's very similar to how Twitch is in a way. I don't really like drawing comparisons between Twitch and but, you know, you have a handful of top streamers on Twitch that make a crazy amount of money. And then the average streamer makes way below minimum wage. And that's the case with as well. But I mean, that's just a whole nother topic for its own. But the thing is, by 2025, Leonid was looking for a buyer. And it didn't take long for him to realize, selling this platform is going to be a challenge. Because on paper, I mean, the investment is insane. Over $1.4 billion in annual net revenue, profit margins that most businesses would consider borderline unbelievable, roughly 380 million registered users, and fewer than 50 people on payroll. If you strip the context and handed someone the financial statements, they would assume they were looking at some sort of tech unicorn that had figured out everything. However, the context is the biggest problem here, because a large portion of the institutional investors, you know, the ones with the actual capital to do a deal at this scale, they operate under something called vice clauses, which are restrictions embedded in their agreements with their own backers that prevent them from putting money into certain categories. Because often, I mean, these firms don't only use their own money. They have liquidity providers or people who invest money into them, and they operate as a hedge fund, and then they deploy other people's money with the end goal of, you know, beating the S&P 500 in an annual return. And a lot of people just don't want their funds to go into, you know, investing in these vice businesses, which considers adult content, tobacco, gambling, and weapons. So regardless of the numbers, a lot of the most obvious buyers are essentially blocked from even writing the check. Then you have the operational risks, which are, you know, Visa and MasterCard. They've already shown that they could, you know, threaten to cut off payment processing for adult platforms. And this is exactly what pushed OF towards its failed 2021 ban. And since the platform is almost entirely reliant on subscription revenue, it has to go through payment processors that take somewhere between 5 to 10% in fees on top of the 2 to 3% fees from the most regular, you know, Visa and MasterCard, which is far above the usual 2 to 3% that most regular businesses are charged from payment processors. So obviously, that is a tax on their margins, and now they're dependent to payment processors. And not only that, but there's also a regulatory pressure. So the UK communications regulator, they hit with a £1.4 million fine in early 2025 for a weak age verification practice, which, you know, might not be the biggest deal for them financially, but it's a pretty clear sign of where this enforcement is going. And then you have that exit problem, because even if someone bought it, how do they eventually sell it? Like, taking it public through a stock market listing, that's essentially impossible under the current conditions. And there's also no obvious second buyer standing by, and the insane financials don't resolve the fact that this is an asset most people in finance don't really want to be publicly associated with. And I mean, if I was to guess, that might be one of the reasons why they tried to stop allowing adult content on their platform back in, 2021, plus the whole payment processors problem. So the asking price of the platform started at about $8 billion, and no one was interested, despite their insanely high valuation. But the firm that eventually emerged as, I guess, the most serious buyer was Architect Capital, a San Francisco-based investment fund that got its start in 2020, providing credit to Latin American startups. And they had more recently become known for its tendency towards complicated situations, because its founder, James Sagan, was one of the larger investors in Juul, a, vaping and nicotine product that you guys are probably familiar with at this point. And honestly, that's just a whole nother video, because Juul completely took over the world like right before the pandemic, and it definitely did extremely well during the pandemic. And then it seems like it kind of got like banned, at least most of their flavors got banned. And then suddenly you had like Geek Bars and all these other like off-brand versions of Juul, which arguably are worse, that kind of took over everything. But yeah, long story, but essentially Juul had its products pulled by the shelves by the FDA, and they later settled more than $1 billion in lawsuits over allegations that it was being marketed towards teenagers. So, I mean, it's safe to say that Architect's brand has some tolerance for risky investments. And the pitch Sagan made to the potential backers had two core ideas. First, diversify the platform, push it towards mainstream creator niches, and try to make it competitive with something like Patreon, rather than positioning it as purely an adult content site. Obviously, OF is primarily an adult content platform, and the majority of the traffic and subscriptions and the money all comes from that. And without that core, it would just be a minor player when it comes to, like, competing in the space with YouTube, Patreon, and Spotify. And now that Spotify also added long-form content and subscription models. But I feel like it might even be smaller than Rumble if they tried to play in the non-adult space. Also, fun fact, since I'm mentioning Spotify, I was kind of forced to make a Spotify because some dude kept stealing my content and re-uploading it to Spotify. So if you want to enjoy my content on Spotify, you can do that as well. I'll leave a link down below so you guys know that it's actually me and not the dude impersonating me. So if you want to leave a review there, that would also help me not get impersonated. But continuing the video, over the years, OF has genuinely been trying to build a safe for work community on the platform, including chefs, athletes, musicians, comedians, and fitness coaches. And they also launched their own safe for work streaming service called OF TV back in 2021. And they've actively been trying to pursue other partnerships since. But I don't really think any of it really took off, though that is, again, still such a tiny portion of what actually is. Then you have, the real competitors here, YouTube, Spotify, and Patreon. They don't allow any 18 plus content. And I don't see a world where OF is actually able to compete with any of these platforms in the safer work space because, the stigma that comes with the name. It's just like, I don't know. I just can't see most creators being very inclined to be like, hey guys, follow my unless they're paid like a massive bag. Yeah, it just doesn't make sense to me. But that problem will be something the new owner will have to inherit. And another step that they might need to do is acquire a banking license. Because even if they acquire OF, what happens if the payment processors shut them off? That would be really bad. So a potential solution for that would be if the platform could become its own financial institution. I mean, in theory, it could. That would definitely be a massive uphill battle for them, though. But that would at least help them reduce the 5 to 10% fee burden. Currently, the valuation on the table is $3.5 billion, with Architect taking 60% of the equity in the deal. So in just a few years, this is essentially lost $4.5 billion in valuation because no one wants to buy it. And the Wall Street Journal had originally reported a total deal value, including debt, at $5.5 billion compared to an earlier $8 billion valuation just 1 year before, with slower growth and tougher sale process dragging the number down. And this number was apparently dragged down due to slower growth and just a tough sales process. But Sagan's $500 million fund wasn't nearly large enough to cover a deal of this size on its own. So he spent months going door to door trying to assemble the capital. And the family offices turned out to be the most receptive audience, largely because they don't really face the same restrictions that prevent more of the, mainstream funds from joining. And the deal was supposed to close by the end of March of this year. But then Leonid passed away. And everything just got way more complicated. Obviously, I don't want to sound disrespectful here, But terrible time. Just when everything seemed aligned, he passed away. And this happened on March 20th, 2026 in Florida. And the platform made an announcement with a brief statement saying that he had passed away peacefully after a long battle with cancer. But his family asked for privacy and no details were shared. But what came out in the following days were how few people actually knew about how serious his condition was. And sources told the media that Leonid himself had driven the urgency behind the sale because of his health. Because the guy was apparently trying to get a deal closed specifically because he was concerned about leaving his family in a complicated situation without clear ownership. And as a part of that, in 2024, he transferred his stake of the company into a private trust, with his family being the expected beneficiaries. So obviously, if the deal with Architect Capital was already messy, it just got so much worse. Because the firm was still in the process of raising the equity it needed when Leonid passed. So it seems like the money simply just wasn't fully there. And suddenly now, investors who've been on the fence were dealing with a whole new layer of issues. Now you have estate laws, a different person now effectively in control of the asset, and deal terms would now have to be renegotiated with a trust rather than the original seller. So the timeline that was already extended was pushed back once again. And as of this video, the deal remains open. And the future of right now is genuine uncertain, which is why it seems like the empire is collapsing. And the company has a current CEO. His name is Kelly Blair, who has been running the day-to-day operations. But what's clear is there's a lot of money at stake, a lot of different interests, and a company that, despite everything working against it, keeps printing cash at a rate that makes it very hard to ignore. So, I mean, it's safe to say whatever happens next will probably not be any more bizarre than the story of this company. I mean, the company's story is how a $10,000 loan from a dad with way too much patience suddenly turned into a $7 billion a year empire ran by some secret Ukrainian billionaire no one has ever heard of. I mean, come on, this is such a crazy story. And I feel like this is just a situation that no one's been talking about, because every time I hear OF in the news, it's about one of their stars making like a bazillion dollars a year. So I just wanted to come here and talk about it for a bit. So hey, if you're new here, my name's Atozi, or A to Z, and we talk about the laughably stupid stuff and the bizarre things that happen here on the internet. So if you're new here, feel free to subscribe, drop a like if you enjoyed the video, and I'll see you guys in the next one. Peace.